All right, we are live. Hello and welcome to the Crypto Explorer. It's a podcast by Sygnum Bank, designed to bring you closer to the world of crypto and to the future of finance. I'm your host, Alia Dasgupta, and today I'm so excited to be speaking to Lior Gruen from the Spartan Group and Luca Borlando, who leads the ventures team here at Sygnum Bank. They're going to tell us what it's like to be in a VC in these kind of slightly turbulent, slightly bearish markets, and also what a startup needs to do to continue to find investment in these times. So a lot for us to talk about, but before we dive into it, maybe a quick round of introductions. Lior, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, thank you very much for having us here today, Alia, and great to reconnect with you as well, Luca. By way of background, I'm originally from Australia, spent the last 10 years between Europe and Asia working in finance and tech, been fully focused on the blockchain and Web3 ecosystem since 2016, and now I'm a managing director at Spartan Group. Spartan Group is a leading Web3 venture capital, hedge fund, and investment banking group fully dedicated to this space. Passionate about working with and backing entrepreneurs, everything from first check-in all the way out to helping them exit. Excited to be here today to talk about the current VC landscape. Thank you.
Fantastic. And Luca?
Thanks a lot, Leah and Lior. Also excited from my side. I started out in the public markets, mostly on the derivative side, but then very quickly realized that alternative markets, specifically private markets, is where my passion was at. So after spending the last 7-8 years in Asia, predominantly in Singapore, I lead the ventures team at Sygnum that looks basically at investment opportunities across the board in the digital asset space in Europe and in Asia. But overall, we like to position ourselves as a strategic investor when we look at companies that is not only putting in money, but also a further collaboration down the road.
Super. Glad to have you both here. And maybe like just as a first question, right, in this kind of market environment where things like 2022 had a lot of shocks and a lot of pitfalls, and all of us are dealing with the repercussions of that like deep into 2023 as well. What is your investment thesis in the current market, and what are you most bullish on, Lior?
Yeah, sure. Happy to kick this off because I think it basically sets the tone for where most of the venture efforts have been this year, which is basically focusing on, I think, a migration away from operating in unregulated spaces and trying and innovating in new domains to really moving that into things which are trusted, proven models of operating, which are understood by people, and certainly going down the compliant path of doing things properly. Now, when you double click on that and think about what that means, I think that is the foundation for a much more robust and healthy industry, right, in the long term. When we talk about the market participants today, who's involved and doing what they're looking to do. Basically, all of that has now given us a level of confidence that the actors who are in this space today operating and continuing to build and double down in this market, no matter how difficult it is to do things, are doing it in good faith and intend to be part of building out this industry going forward. So, I mean, specifically in terms of trends, and I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about this. I mean, we at Spartan have two specific venture capital funds. One is focused on decentralized finance, DeFi, which is certainly still where the bulk of our history and pedigree has been in. And secondly, of course, our second venture fund, which is focused on gaming, metaverse, and NFTs, and looking really at that crypto community, Web3 community and culture side of the industry. We're equally bullish on both and can go into more details on that in a moment.
Super. And Luca?
Yeah, I definitely can echo what Leo says in terms of the changing landscape of today's crypto markets. I think from our perspective, when we compare the current market environment to how things were 4 years ago in the depth of the 2019 bear market, things have changed considerably. We are now at a stage where the asset class as a whole has established itself as a persistent part of alternative investments in investors' eyes, and that gives it a level of legitimacy as well as professionalism that didn't exist at that time. When we look at the markets, we mostly focus actually on we call it like 5 points that we really emphasize. First of all, is that we're still very early on, despite digital assets having now reached 1 trillion at the moment, but they were much higher before. We're still at the beginning of the usage of the technology. Now, what has changed is that regulation, as Lior mentioned, is unavoidable. It's key. And whether you want it or not, you need to deal with it today, not yesterday. And you need to do that in a way that enables users to have new use cases that are enabled specifically by the technology, but also that give a user experience that is comparable to what Web2 or traditional technology companies offer. We're still very far away from it. There are the companies that are making big strides towards that goal, but we're still not there yet. Fundamentally, the current crypto experience is still way too complicated for the average person. And that this really where we look at the market and from our experience as operators in the field, want to invest strategically in infrastructure, in companies that develop these new use cases, and that also do it in a compliant way.
Interesting. So both of you talked a little bit about how regulation is coming kind of front and center. Luca, you talked a little bit about the user experience. What sorts of, areas of these sorts of technology developments are you guys most bullish on? So what kind of companies do you look at and say, ah, yes, this is something I'm going to go after, or this is something I want to learn more about?
Besides profitable ones, because that's usually the best ones at the moment.
Absolutely. And?
maybe I can kick this off directly. I think from our side, again, because we come at it at a slightly different angle than most other investors, when we invest into companies, we really look to leverage the operational insights that we have as an operating company in the space, specifically one that is active as a regulated entity in the financial space. So from our side, there are areas that we really want to focus on. We put it into 6 different buckets. One is obviously protocols and layers, so the whole scalability topic. One is about regulatory technology, so companies that help other companies be compliant, everything around taxes and all of that, that is still, because the rules keep changing all the time, is something that we as a regulated company feel quite strongly about. And then everything about payments, DeFi, insurance, but also privacy and security, because as the current technology will be adopted more widely, these are aspects that are going to be important when it comes to scaling to people. That's why, for example, on the protocol layer, things like zero-knowledge technology is very important because it can offer the security but also the privacy for users. And we're also not immune to current market trends. So whenever we look at companies, we also look, for example, at how can we use new technologies that have come out in the crypto space. So obviously the buzzword at the moment is anything AI. Definitely for us, we see it more as a means to an end, as a way to increase the safety of transactions by detecting malicious transactions in the background and therefore increasing the user experience in the back.
Yeah, I mean, just to add, I think some of the core elements behind this or underpinning it, especially on the more crypto-native side, right? And by that, I mean, let's say token-first principles, is certainly the element of infrastructure, and Luca touched on this. There is a lot of infrastructure being built. Zero knowledge has been a talked-about concept and in production for a while now, and we're certainly starting to see an uptick in what that means in practice. But I think what everyone comes back to the same point is really this idea of cross-chain and interoperability. How do you address, you know, it's not the one blockchain rules all and that we're suddenly sticking to one database to do everything that's ever needed in this Web3 world, right? And certainly for any of these applications to be successful long-term, we certainly hope they get adopted well beyond the Web3 world, right? And that's kind of where we're thinking about this space and what's possible. So We're very much focusing on interoperability, and you know, some of our portfolio companies like Layer Zero providing the messaging layer for that. I mean, those are the kinds of projects which we're excited to see come to market, come to get scale and real adoption. In these markets when, you know, wallet activity, despite the regulatory pressure, is still, you know, DApp Radar reported for the month of June over 2 million wallets engaged or interacted with dApps. I mean, we're still seeing a level of engagement in this ecosystem, in this community, which is, you know, frankly, unprecedented outside of bull market periods and representative, I think, of a resilient industry that today is still in its early stages, as Luca pointed out, but really just getting started in terms of what's possible and where it's going. And I mean, just to cap that off with things which are outside of the crypto native world, you know, there are many equity or enterprise software businesses who are operating in this sector, which have built, you know, incredibly sophisticated solutions for understanding, processing, and computing what is happening in the on-chain world and translating that data into things that are valuable insights for any and every application you could imagine in financial markets, in understanding the way in which information flows. And I think this is an area which in this markets, just given where valuations are at, again, become interesting for people who have been sitting on the sidelines looking at this sector, never really understanding how to get involved or why to get involved, and now looking at this opportunity set and saying, you know, there are great businesses here with great entrepreneurs building incredible software. This is a time to take a look at that and understand you know, how this plays out and integrates with many other things in their portfolio. So very excited about what's happening in this space and could only be more bullish about, you know, the numbers that we're seeing through this bear market at the moment.
Interesting. I mean, things have changed though, right? Like, you guys have been in this space now for several years, all of you. Oh, both of you. And last year or the year before was really dominated by the low interest rate macro environment. And today we really are done with that era of like free money, and growth is starting to be a little bit more tempered. In the crypto landscape, how has that impacted your investment outlook? Maybe Lior.
Yeah, so I think this is exactly the point and opportunity set that gives us a lot of confidence in the resilience of the market. As you touched on with the low interest rate environments last year, there were a lot of very interesting and attractive return profiles being offered to people for holding cryptocurrencies. Nowadays, if you look at the ETH staking rewards, the number that gets thrown around is about 4% or up to. I mean, that doesn't compare to necessarily what's being offered on your fiat currencies and US dollar denominated term deposits and your bank deposits. So I think the fact that despite all of these conditions in 2023, it's now July, right? I mean, Bitcoin has been one of the best performing asset classes year to date. Now, the first to acknowledge that last year had a very different implication on that. But I think the reality is that despite the changing macro climate, there are assets, there are money coming into this industry, into this sector for a reason, right? And I think that that's the reason that we, in forming long-term views to double down on this sector, are saying there's more to this than just, let's say, the top 10 basket of assets, that there is a level of innovation that's happening there under the surface. And certainly a lot of those things will be adapted and integrated into many things that we take for granted in other aspects of life. And that's what gives us the confidence to keep investing in this space and you know, surround ourselves with other entrepreneurs building in the sector.
Yeah, no, I echo a lot of the points that Lior mentioned. I think specifically looking at it from a private markets perspective, things have changed considerably. And I think the largest difference really is the end of the zero interest rate phenomenon. So when we look at, if we want to divide things into eras, 2021 was the era of growth. Companies were growing like crazy. They couldn't hire fast enough. They couldn't grow fast enough. And then came 2022, which especially in crypto was the era of survival. Forget everything you were doing in 2021. Just focus on surviving the year. And it was incredibly difficult to raise funds for companies in that environment because there was so much uncertainty. And now we're getting into 2023. And here we are seeing that, you know, the dust has settled. Some companies have come back to market when it comes to fundraising. Certainly expectations have been managed in terms of valuations, in terms of round sizes and so on. And we've entered a somewhat more clearly laid out age of efficiency. So now the companies are all about doing more with the resources that they have right now. That also means that as an investor, we are seeing interesting companies, companies that have built great software, great products, coming now to market at more reasonable valuations, very different from what we had seen in 2021. So if you're active in the space right now, if you have the dry capital to deploy, it's certainly better exit conditions that you have right now, entry conditions right now that you have compared to 2 years ago. The one topic, though, is that because of the difficulties that 2022 showed, a lot of the tourist capital, a lot of the capital that was there just because it was hyped, has left the space. So now it's either the ones that are really sector-specific, like Spartan, like us, or the ones that have been looking at it for a long while, maybe haven't acted upon it because valuations were high and lofty, and now are looking to pick up things at a more reasonable price. And I think we see that also on the public side, with all the large financial institutions coming in, with all the ETF filings and so on. All of those things don't happen overnight. All of those things have been months and years in planning. So it means that there has been a continued interest in the space, even though it was not happening in the foreground. So all of that makes us very positive about the future of the space. Again, it's now an established asset class, even though an alternative asset class. And that makes us positive about the investment opportunities in it.
Interesting. I mean, both of you are talking about a really positive picture, right? Like that the builders are still building, there's still a lot of innovation going on. Maybe the tourists are a little bit less excited right now, but the people committed to the actual technology growth are still around. But when you look at the numbers charts, you see actually that the number of startups that have been established this year has actually been incredibly low. And also in terms of the amount of capital deployed, we've seen, I think we're on track for, is it 200 billion this year, like by the end of the year, compared to something closer to 400 billion last year. How does that sort of, color your outlook? Luca, maybe first.
Well, certainly it has become harder to raise capital. And it has become harder to raise capital both in early stages, that's when the new companies are formed, but especially at later stages where, again, topics of valuations led some companies to delay their fundraises in the future. These difficulties certainly do lead to fewer people wanting to start a new company in this sector. However, in my experience, it also means that the ones that do start a company in this environment, in this sector right now, are either the crazy ones or the very determined ones. In both cases are usually very good prerequisites for successful companies. So yes, maybe the absolute number of companies has gone down, but I would say that the average quality of the single company has gone up, because the expertise, the type of caliber of people that is still coming into the space right now after all the hype, is actually much higher than the many, many companies in 2021. So yes, numbers look like they're going down, but I would say that on average for the industry, it's probably a better consolidation period right now than it is at the height of the market.
Yeah. And I'll go back to a point that Luca mentioned earlier as well around the ETF filings. Now, obviously Larry and BlackRock coming into the space has got a lot of the crypto enthusiasts, talking about this as if, that was expected to happen all along, when really the whole idea in the beginning was to go against the system. And now we're seeing and championing and, Wall Street basically into this sector. My thinking around this, to be honest, and that's why when we're looking at the numbers now and the ones that you referenced earlier, I don't think that's a bad thing, right? I really think that having concentrated, focused entrepreneurs working on new projects is one thing, and therefore setting up new companies. But when we look at the price action and macro, I mean, just because we have new ETFs, rushing to NASDAQ and Tier 1 exchanges, I don't think that changes anything, frankly. And we may be very underwhelmed by how they perform, right? JP Morgan's been saying this in some of their analyst reports, and I couldn't echo that sentiment any louder. I think just because they exist doesn't mean immediately there will be capital flocking to it. And I don't think that changes anything, because the underlying infrastructure is what we're focused on here, which is Are these products, are these instruments being accessible for institutional markets? Are those markets liquid and can therefore the vast majority of capital that sits in the world be allocated to this sector and the establishment of a truly alternative asset class? And that's really the KPIs to be tracking here as opposed to absolute dollar values. Because, I mean, to be frank, we've had publicly listed ETFs in Canada, in Switzerland, here in Switzerland, right, listed on SIX, listed on the TMX for years now. And they've garnered, I would on a good day call mediocre interest. And just because suddenly we have some of the top tier names on Wall Street issuing them, I don't think that necessarily changes the fundamental level of interest in this space. So just because we have them today, I don't think that those are the KPIs to be tracking. It's really a lot deeper. And that's why when we look at things, we really rather focus on level of activity, you know, wallets interacting with and engaging in dApps and participating in this ecosystem, of course, in addition to actual capital flows. So that's probably a much more robust KPI, in my opinion.
I love that. And you're talking about KPIs tracking the sector. You talked about, I guess, the number of wallets that are engaging. Of course, capital flows are always important. What are other metrics that you consider when assessing projects or traction of a specific product?
Yeah, so I think, you know, from our perspective, this is also two very separate sides of the industry. So on the DeFi side and the gaming side, you probably see very different applications and use cases, just given the actual target market, right? And in terms of the number of gamers, I mean, we always talk about a $200 billion industry on the gaming side and how is that going to move on chain? Does it need to move on chain? I think these are questions that are slowly being answered as we see more and more wallets interacting with dApps. So that, I think that is just a crucial topic for adoption on the gaming side. And the reason that's important, right, if we look at the dApp radar numbers from last month, and this is one of the main topics for us at the moment is understanding who is doing what in this space. Gaming has actually overtaken DeFi as the most used interactor with dApps, right? So we're already seeing that thesis play through that I think it's just over a third. They're about similar, but just over a third of wallets interacting with dApps are in the gaming vertical. And that for us is largely encouraging because, you know, 18 months ago, no one was talking about gaming in the way that we're talking about it now. And now suddenly one third of activity on chain interacting with dApps. So let's say beyond layer one, layer two kind of infrastructure activity, interacting with actual applications is in the gaming vertical. And that's something that we expect to, you know, continue to grow on a very accelerated pace. So very optimistic about what we're seeing and how people are getting engaged in this space, albeit again, decoupled from those macro price action activity, which, you know, depending on the flavor of the week or month, keeps Wall Street occupied or the SEC occupied with either positive or negative sentiment.
Yeah, so I think it's a very different answer when it comes to KPIs, whether you're looking at the macro topic or whether you're looking at single company. Obviously, every single company is going to have different KPIs that you look out for depending on the monetization or the business model that they have. So that's very difficult to say in a general way. But when we look at macro things, and certainly we have maybe a little bit of a biased view coming from the financial sector, the two other ones that we closely monitor, and one would be the staking percentages of various chains, mostly because that is an indication of long-term capital being allocated to the space. You're not going to be staking, for example, Cosmos, if you want to go in and out in the next 1 month, because the unstaking time itself is 21 days. So the higher that number, the more probability of long-term capital remaining in the system. So staking ratios are an important indicator for us. And here, for example, we see Ethereum staking ratio going up and up every week. I think we're now reaching 20%, or have just reached 20%, which is still far below the average proof of stake staking ratios that are in the high 50s. So there's still a lot of room to go. That's one. The other one is actually stablecoin activity, mostly because payments is or money flows are still one of the largest areas in which cryptos found product market fit. And if we look at the amounts and quantities of transactions that involve stablecoins, we're still growing quarter by quarter. So despite the bear market despite prices going down. Stablecoin activity and the active wallets that use stablecoins has increased over the course of the years. Again, that indicates more activity on chain. One would need to actually take a deeper look and see how many of those wallets are related to each other, so that it's not only wash trading and so on. But overall, I would say that the activity levels on these aspects that have found somewhat of a product market fit, payments, gaming, and so on, sometimes NFTs, depending on the chain and the project, certainly paint a positive picture. Now, it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take time. Crypto itself is not isolated from overall macro environment. So therefore, that has to be taken into account as well. But that's exactly why we track these KPIs, to see how things develop.
Super interesting. And also probably also interesting for our listeners to understand how you guys are grading market developments and projects in general. But maybe taking a bit of a step out, right? Like, you already have obviously a lot of portfolio companies, and VCs always talk about, once you're in, you're a family and you're working together and so on. And especially when things get quite hard, like the market's been challenging right now. What are activities on? What ways do you engage with these companies, and how do you kind of support them and tide them through the tough water? Maybe Luca.
Yes. Well, I think it's important here to see where we come from when we invest into companies. As I mentioned earlier, we are a bit different because we come from an operating background as a company. And given the stage that we invest in, which is usually around the Series A stage, we not only provide money at the beginning, but we also try to provide support both on the growth side of the company. So how do you grow better? But also when things become a little bit more difficult, it's highly probable that we as a company, that we as Signum, at some point face the same issues that the company is facing now. And instead of having somebody come in and say, okay, no, you should do this and this and this because that's what the textbook says, coming in and say, look, I'm not sure exactly what the right option is for you, but when we were facing this issue, we approached it this way, and therefore we believe that this could be a potential option, comes in a more empathetic and humane way over to the companies and helps them be really, hand in hand, go through the difficult times together. Undoubtedly, as an investor, the other parties also not only be there as a shoulder to cry on, but also help them through the times. That can be through bridge rounds that are done internally to provide liquidity to get the companies over the bump. Yeah, so we also support companies when they structured a new round to see what could be helpful for them or what could be less helpful, especially as we mentioned earlier. There is capital that is looking opportunistically to come into the space. And in those cases, obviously, as an existing investor, the priority is to protect the company, but also make sure that it survives and thrives going forward. So it's always a fine line between, getting the terms that you want in a round, but also actually getting the money that you want to grow in the future.
Sure. Leo?
Yeah. No, I think, portfolio management and portfolio support is certainly one of the key aspects and roles of a VC, right? It's not just putting money in. It's also ensuring that there's something that comes out. And the only way to do that is by continuing to support and engage with the ecosystem. And for us, we have really two main ways. So one from our investment team, certainly obviously managing their portfolio. And as Lucas said, supporting them through the difficult times, having those conversations and understanding the capital needs to get through to the next level, to the next stage, or the next, let's say, milestones that they can continue to grow off if they're not already profitable, or being that honest sounding board, right? And I think for us at Spartan, most of us have come from the TradFi industry, understand conventional finance principles and the importance of cash flow in equity businesses, and the way in which incentive accruals happen through token rewards, and how to manage that. So I think that's one area. But specifically in terms of how we position ourselves in the market is really our commitment to participating in governance, specifically on the crypto native side. We have Spartan Labs, which is our own venture studio in-house, We were actually building alongside many of the venture ecosystem funds that we're invested in. For example, Dapper Flow ecosystem, where we're an investor. We've also supported, for example, Mistin Labs and Sui with the about running a validator node. I mean, so getting involved with the tech as and where possible, to be as close to the ecosystem, support and back our portfolio with more than just capital, and ensure that, you know, there's an alignment of interests over creating successful projects, protocols, platforms, whatever we want to call them in the respective terms. But that always comes down to, you know, making sure you have the time and resources to actually be in the trenches alongside the companies rather than just, you know, sitting outside in and always providing advice or pockets of information. We roll our sleeves up and want to be a part of this as we consider ourselves entrepreneurs as well, right? So we're all in this sector together.
I love that. I think that's one of the, that's an interesting one, because having resources and time to actually commit to supporting companies on the journey compared to a little bit of a more, you know, spray and pray, having 200 companies in your portfolio that you almost more or less lose track of. Like, this is, I think, perhaps one of those things that separates a VC that's really deep in the crypto space versus, you know, maybe playing a little bit on the fringes. And Looking a little bit at the market and where we are right now, right? Luca, you said before, you need to be a little bit determined. You need to be a little bit crazy to be out there raising capital right now. But, and we go from one to the other, but maybe you could tell me something that's an automatic red flag that you look at when you see a company that's racing right now, and also a green flag. And this hopefully will be something that's interesting to our listeners too, if they're out there being determined and crazy and trying to raise capital.
It's not easy to generalize red flags or green flags. I think certainly right now the green flags are easier to point out. As I mentioned earlier, we are in the so-called age of efficiency. So being able to show traction that could eventually lead to a monetization path and or break-even, profitability, cash flows, as Lior mentioned, all of those are important. In the end, we need to keep in mind, crypto is a new asset class. It's a new world. It's a new universe that people are active in, but still some fundamental economic laws still apply. If a company wants to be a company, it needs to generate money at some point. And I think a lot of these things had been forgotten over the last years. So companies that can show the traction on how to get there, that's usually a very good sign. Doesn't have to be today. You know, nobody expects a seed company to be profitable today. But having a clear plan and path forward and how they want to develop, that's very important. On the opposite side, if you go out and expect unreasonable terms given the current market environment, if you do not have a sense of reality of what could be acceptable, if you do not have the traction that could justify the valuation. If you are very, let's say, disorganized at how you approach the situation right now, you're making your life probably more difficult than you should. Because right now there's a lot of competition for the same capital. There's a lot of competition for the attention span of VCs around there. Because as we have mentioned, there are opportunities right now that will be seen now almost Series B companies valued at the same valuation that seed companies were valued at 2 years ago. So the market has shifted considerably. And if you do not make that mental jump to upgrade yourself to that level of professionalism, it's going to be very difficult to raise money from capital that is sophisticated and can help you through the highs and lows, as Lior mentioned. So I think be professional, be organized, and ideally, if you have traction, showcase that, because that's right now very important, but also show how the growth looks forward.
Yeah. To echo that sentiment, I think the key thing and what I would say is the main green light, right, is an entrepreneur today who can look you in the eye and say, honestly, this is where we're at. This is what we need to do to get to potentially the valuations that we had in mind, we have make sense, and you know, that we can mutually benefit from, and has a clear path to getting there, right? I think there's a lot of especially companies and people in this space, particularly on the equity side, who are or software side of this industry, who do have that level of professionalism. And that's where I would say they stand out 10 times more than they would in a bull market when everyone's, you know, got great vision, great idea, limited traction or limited ability to execute. Certainly now it's anyone who can address those honest questions up front and just be very pragmatic in their approach to these are the KPIs we need to hit, help us get there with this funding now. And, you know, assuming that they are the quality entrepreneurial team that you backed, and everyone's still together, I think that's another very big green flag, right, is the churn in leadership, management, and founders. If people are staying together, committed to a vision in this market, having gone through the last 18 months of bear, and frankly, you know, implosion of many companies and many of their peers, I think that says a lot about the trajectory they're on, their ability to work together and address difficulties, not only amongst themselves, but also in the companies that they're dealing with, right? They're leaders in their organizations, and people are there following them on this path, right? And if you've been able to keep and have low headcount churn at an organization, I think that says a lot about your business, right? I'm not talking about redundancies and right-sizing, but keeping people on track and actually interested in a vision and common goal.
And that was the green flag. What was the red flag?
There's a very long list. As Lucas said, in this market, the green flags tend to stand out a lot more. I think, you know, one of the realities is, right, I mean, there are many founders in this space who didn't start in 2021. And I think that's equally important to emphasize. So many founders who've been at this for 8, 9, 10 years at this point, who are having difficulties, right, and having difficulties after what I would consider unrealistic expectations or getting carried away with expectations over the last 3 years relative to where they were before that. And I think that that's, you know, those types of conversations are the most difficult ones to have because very time consuming. No one wants to tell a founder that their business is not as valuable or the project or protocol is not as demanded or needed, or, you know, they're just another version of something else that exists and may or may not be better. That's not our job to tell them that, right? I mean, their founders are dedicating their time to this sector. They're all in for the most part. And that's, let's say, a prerequisite for us to be interested in it. And that's difficult conversations if they don't have that level of self-awareness or are not willing to adapt to the current reality. So I think that that's, you know, a very clear distinction that we draw when speaking and qualifying, you know, new opportunities is where are they in that self-awareness journey, and how can we be useful in getting them to, you know, what they tell us they need to be successful. And we may have different views, but that's certainly a conversation that you can have when you're already having that conversation as opposed to, you know, unrealistic expectations of what a business or protocol is or is not.
Sure. Luca, you were saying something.
Yeah, exactly. No. So maybe to add on to that, I think one additional, let's say, green flag, but I would say that is usually you see that from portfolio companies because you see them on a almost day-to-day basis or at least on a monthly check-in basis, is the ability for founders to take and make difficult decisions. Right now, you know, it's always easy to make decisions when everything looks perfect. Everything's growing, everything's going well, perfect. Everybody makes easy decisions. It's a lot harder when things don't go so well. And I'm not talking here only about, you know, decisions on whether to downsize or not a company, which is incredibly difficult, has been done across the industry, but because it impacts people and their lives directly, it is always usually a measure of last resort. But it also comes to decisions about should we pursue that opportunity or not? Should we invest our time and effort into that, yes or no? Something that in a bull market, probably the standard answer would have been, yes, let's go for it. Maybe something comes out of it. Nowadays, you need to be a little bit more mindful about the return on investment that you're getting on your time and effort of the team. So having that mental fortitude to really be focused on the mission, what you're trying to achieve, and even say no to painfully attractive things, if they stray you along too far from where the company's going, I think that's a very healthy and mature thing that founders can do.
Yeah, I think especially in a bull market, it's go deep and go broad. But in a bear market, you'd be like, no, let's pick a couple of very specific areas and go deep there and maybe cut a little bit of the breadth. But I mean, I see that we're completely out of time. But Luca, Lior, thank you both so much for coming on the show. It was really interesting to hear your perspective in this specific market environment. For our listeners, if you've got questions, feel free to write into podcast@signum.com. And until the next time, thank you guys again.
So thanks for having us, Ali. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.